First of all, thank you for inviting us. Some of the things I'm going to speak about, Rabbi Gersten already touched on them, a few stories that might help illustrate some of these issues that we deal with. So, bear with me. This happens to be the busiest time for us, people in the field, pastoring. This is the Pesach season. Last Sunday was like every table place wanted that Sunday to catch the Pesach. So I apologize at the beginning of this. There's going to be a lot of just reading from it, but move along. Also, some of the things I'm going to say might be pretty basic. I'm just going to go through that part a little quicker. And as I go along, when I come to the parts, I'll point out some of the equipment we use in order to be able to catch it. So I'm going to speak mainly about industrial kashering, and I'm also going to touch on food service kashering. So industrial kashering refers to kashering a factory or different types of equipment in a factory. And food service kashering is talking about hotels, restaurants, nursing homes, or hospital kitchens. So industrial kashering, you could encounter different types of equipment that present unique difficulties. Some examples of the more complicated types of equipment are spray dryers, votators, homogenizers, heat exchangers, as Rabbi Gersten was describing, vacuum pans, and deep fryers. So I'm going to speak about one of the more common and straightforward pieces of equipment, a steam kettle. So attempt to illustrate to you how many difficulties could arise during kashering even this basic, straightforward piece of equipment. So again, a steam kettle, you just heard about this, is very similar to a soup pot you have in your home. If you want to kasher a soup pot, you put it on the stove, you have a flame on the bottom. But since a steam kettle is so large, the flame source just on the bottom wouldn't suffice to heat up the whole kettle. So therefore, they came up with this double-walled tank that has steam circulating through it. Sometimes it has hot water circulating through it. Most of the time it's steam. It's called a steam kettle. And that's how you'll heat up your product, and that's how we'll heat up the Mei Hagala when we need to kasher that. Okay. Just like your soup pot at home, you'd wait 24 hours. Ain ben yoma, you make sure it's clean, which is a much bigger challenge, which I'll speak about. Probably the biggest challenge when you're in a factory. You fill it up all the way, let it come to a boil, and make sure it overflows over the edges. Now, water boils at 212 Fahrenheit at atmospheric pressure. Okay? So at home and in most factory steam kettles, you wouldn't need a thermometer to measure the temperature. You just need to see the bubbles and then you know it's boiling. But there's some situations where relying on visually seeing the bubbles will not suffice or sometimes not even be possible. So in these situations, you must be able to measure the temperature of the water in order to ensure a proper kashering. One problem which could arise is when the plant uses direct steam injection. So direct steam injection is when you inject the steam directly into the product to be heated. So in the steam jacketed kettle, the steam only circulates around the outside walls of the tank and never comes in direct contact with the product. But when steam is injected directly into the tank, it causes bubbles. Just like, see, children blow in a straw and a glass of chocolate milk, you see the bubbles come up. It's the same effect. You're going to have bubbles in that tank when you have direct steam injection. So someone not experienced in industrial kashering might mistake these bubbles as an indication that the water is boiling. Another possible cause for confusion would be from water overflowing out of the top of a tank. When water is heated, it expands. And when you heat a large volume of water, you get a lot of expansion. And therefore, a lot of overflowing water way before it reaches 212 degrees. Again, someone not experienced might mistake the water overflowing from the tank due to expansion as an indication the water is already boiling. So this is all hakdama for this maisa now. Around 10 years ago, I was sent to a plant to kasher one of their tanks and was faced with a situation that illustrates these difficulties I mentioned. The tank that needed to be kashered was a 40,000-gallon tank. The top of the tank was completely closed with a small glass window being the only way to see inside. The tank was reached by climbing a set of metal stairs onto a second floor platform or catwalk. I first checked the inside of the tank by looking through the window to ensure that the tank was clean to my satisfaction. In a factory and also in catering, if you don't carry a flashlight with you, you're just not going to, you know, see things you're supposed to see. So anyone looking into that thing, it will appear clean, and if you shine a flashlight, then you'll see all the things that you should have been looking at. So that's a must. Anyway, this tank was clean. The plant workers started to fill the tank up with water. The filling alone took between 3 and 4 hours, just to fill it up. The steam jacket was turned on to heat the tank, the water in the tank, and since it takes a long time to heat 40,000 gallons of water, they attached a steam hose directly to the bottom, the valve in the tank where the product would come out, or where the Mei HaGolah was. They hooked up steam directly in the bottom in order to speed up the process. So we have steam circulating around the tank in the steam jacket, and in addition, we had direct steam injection going through the inside. Now, the company disconnected one of the lines so there'd be a physical opening on top of the tank that I would be able to see water boiling out of. I brought for later, but I'll just show you. By lines, meaning pipes, this is just a collection of different size pipes, and I'll talk about this later. But this would be, they would basically undo one of these clamps so you'd have an opening on the top. What companies do, Eric Gerson was talking about those storage tanks. Usually we have something called a tank farm, and at one end of the plant they'll have all these tanks, and then they'll pump the products, let's say oils if you're making mayonnaise. So they'll pump the oil through, it's called hard piped. The person has a batch sheet, the recipe for the mayonnaise, he'll punch in how many thousands or hundreds of gallons of oil he wants, and then it'll just kick the pump on through the factory and then go right in through these pipes. That's what we call hard pipe. These are the lines that we're referring to. So they disconnected one of these pipes, so when it would start to boil, I could see the water coming out of that line. Again, this was one that didn't have a big cover, and we couldn't open it up, so that's what they did. They broke one of these lines. Okay. This opening was around 2 inches in diameter, which is bigger than all these pipes, a little wider. So after several hours of waiting for the tank to boil, one of the plant supervisors pointed to the water overflowing out of the open pipe and told me that the water was already boiling. To back up his claim, he pointed to a temperature gauge at the side of the tank and showed me that it read 215 degrees. Now, this would be the type of temperature gauge that would go, this threaded here would screw into what they call, a thermal well. It goes into the tank, and that will measure the temperature on the inside. What the supervisor didn't know was that while I was waiting for the water to fill up, and I had a lot of time to kill then, earlier in the day, I had a schmooze with one of the workers and asked the plant worker a lot of questions, including what that particular gauge was, or what it measured. So he told me that it measured the jacket temperature, which is very odd because it's not something you'd come across. Usually it's the thermal well goes all the way into the center of the tank and it's measuring the product. So I verified this by tracing the lines. Now remember, the jacket is filled with steam. Steam is around 220 degrees. So shortly after turning the steam on the jacket, the temperature of that jacket will be between 200 and 220 degrees, regardless of what the temperature of the water inside the tank is. Okay. Now, there were other gauges. One was a digital readout, which was either not connected or broken, and there was another one which was not calibrated, so I couldn't use any of those. So luckily I had my own digital thermocouple, which... And calibration is a big issue that, you know, whether you can rely on the thermometers that the companies have. A lot of times, I have one company that I go, it could be 0, 1, 2, or 3 times a week to kasher at 5 in the morning. They go back and forth between Sam Yenim. So we kasher there. And I know which kettles that their thermometers are off. I mean, it really doesn't matter because I am able to see visually and I don't have the problems that I'm describing now. But anyway, this is a digital thermocouple. It has different attachments. This is actually the one that I used that day. And what I did was I dropped this down that pipe, that open pipe on the top, and I was able to get a readout of the temperature. So at the same time that the supervisor was trying to convince me that the water was boiling, it was actually only 140 degrees at that time. So we waited until it really did boil, which was around 6:30 in the evening, 9.5 hours after I arrived at the plant. By the way, the supervisor left even before we got to this. He wasn't patient enough, so he left and kept me there, and then we had it job done. Anyway, so it's very important to know the equipment that to be kosher, how it works. You should be able to recognize a steam line, a gas line, a water line, and other pipes and fittings attached to a tank or other piece of equipment. Before you kosher a piece of equipment or a whole system, you should have someone from the company walk you through the entire process from beginning to end. You know, sometimes something very important, you know, might overlook that's in the very beginning. But so when the ingredients are first received, you go through. Even if you know the system, you could, you know, play dumb and ask them to go to explain everything as if it's your first time in a plant. And you know, sometimes you'll hear other things that you wouldn't have caught otherwise. A tank in one plant could be used as a cold process with no heat source attached to the tank, while in a different plant, the same type of tank could be heated. So every plant, every piece of equipment, even similar ones, could be different. Now, there are many similarities and differences between food service koshering and industrial koshering. One of the biggest differences is that in food service koshering, you're doing the actual Haggadah and other forms of koshering. Now, anyone knows anything about catering, gone to a fancy chas in a hotel, you're normally dealing with around 3 forks, 3 knives, 4 forks, 4 knives, 2 spoons, the chedjman, at least 3.5 forks per person for the shmorg. So you're dealing with thousands and thousands of pieces of silverware that you're physically, you know, dipping into the boiling water, usually with ammonia or a dover pagum into it, in it. Even if the silver is ain't a vineyard, I'll explain why. So it's very hands-on. Mashenkein, in industrial koshering, in most factory settings, they will not let you touch anything. So this is usually due to one of three reasons: either safety concerns, insurance regulations, or union rules. Okay? I sometimes try to get them allow me to do it by trying to, you know, convince them that I'm also, you know, with the union, the Orthodox Union. And but anyway, if that ploy doesn't work, this is a very important point: the employees are going to be doing the physical koshering. And your function is to guide and instruct them to ensure that your koshering is being done correctly. And a lot of times that's very frustrating. I know for myself, or anyone else that's more hands-on, it's a lot easier sometimes to do it yourself. If you're spraying something with water, to stand over someone and tell them, no, you missed a spot, it's a lot easier just to do it yourself. So in some of these companies where they don't want you to, for one of the reasons above, it's a lot more difficult. So even if the company would let you do the actual koshering, there are many times that you'll have to kosher very expensive machinery. If something breaks or is damaged, they will blame you, whether it's your fault or not. So besides being blamed, we have a halacha, right? Tough analysis design. Chayas Dilma Chayas. So this is actually one of my favorite halachas. I don't know if anyone chaps already why. But the Mishnah Berurah brings down that keren, we can't kasher keren, which is ivory, because it would be makalkel in the boiling water. So chayshim and delma chayeslai, we're afraid it will break. So the Mishnah Berurah in Nunhei says, but hasuya mi pearl muter, kiven shu kasher ma'od, right, ain't a daima lekeren. So pearl is very kasher, that you can kasher. This has a lot of practical applications, both in catering halls and in factories. When you have very expensive equipment, obviously this is talking about, you know, things that could break, whether you're afraid of it breaking or whether you're confident that you could do it. Because Chazal said you can't kosher this because of this halacha, you can't. But there's other things where I guess it might depend more on your comfort level, whether you feel that you might break it or not. To that end, we have a release form. The OU has a release form that we, when we kosher a restaurant or something, we make them sign it. You know, tell, because most equipment is not made to be brought up to the temperatures that it's brought up to, and not taking the abuse that it does when we kosher. And so we make them sign a release. So that takes a little, I guess, edge off the Dilma Chayas, but it also, you know, protects you. Okay. So one example of expensive machinery that could easily be damaged during koshering would be a commercial oven band. So at a commercial bakery, like Nabisco that makes Oreos, cookies, so they usually have ovens which are like long tunnels. It's a long tunnel with a metal mesh or perforated band running through the oven. So the items to be baked are formed and deposited onto a series of conveyors or belts that carry the product to the oven band. The temperature of the oven and the speed of the oven band are adjusted to ensure that the raw dough is fully baked by the time it exits the tunnel oven. So this band, at least the ones I've captured, could be 300 feet long. In other words, the oven is around 150 feet, and it, you know, circles underneath and goes around. So it's a 300-foot, either stainless steel or iron or whatever that metal is. And to kasher this band, you would need a Lieben gum, because the products are being placed directly on without any intermediate, any liquid. So that, which between 900 to 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit. So heating the oven band to this extreme temperature could easily damage the band. Their biggest concern was that it's stretching, that it wouldn't go back to the exact spot. And then when you have the cookies going from one belt onto another conveyor, they'd end up with this gap. So that was one of their biggest concerns. So a place like this, how do I know I have Lieben gum? So a place like this, we have something which is called an infrared thermometer. There's a lot of Meilson constraints to this. You can see this has an infrared dot, so I could, you know, shoot it all the way across the room. I don't have to be right up near it, and it will tell me what temperature that is. I'll have the readout. I can do Fahrenheit, Celsius. The mile of this is, if any of the other thermometers, if you have something that's 1,000 degrees and you're going to try to measure it, either it won't go up to 1,000 degrees, or you could burn yourself by putting your hand holding that device that close to the oven band. Okay, I'm now going to go over just some of the basic halachas, more practical of the kashering, and I'll bring in some things in a minute. Okay, so especially when I talk about food, I talk about a lot of food service. I do factories and catering, and this halacha is more this next comment is more nogei food service, but also factories. So I like to say that there are five methods of kashering. Okay, Hagala, Irui, Lieben Kal, Lieben Gamer, and my favorite is no, it can't be kosher. And especially in food service, you have to realize you have a caterer, you have a very pressured job. A lot of this work is done under a lot of pressure at a catering job. You know, you can't just stop and take a time out. You know, the chuppah is at a certain time. You got to get everything kosher. And you know, they'll give you a piece of equipment here, kosher this. So you have to feel comfortable and know what can be kosher and what cannot be. So there's certain times you just have to say no. Okay. Most also, like I mentioned, in food service kosher, just like industrial kosher, you must know how the piece of equipment to be kosher is used. How the equipment is used will determine which method of koshering to apply. I'm sure you're all familiar. When I do food service, I usually bring a chafing dish. When you go to a shmorg, a reception, all the food is kept in that. You have a stand which holds a water pan, the pan that's heated by Sterno, this gel. Then there's an insert, a food pan, where they actually heat the food up in an oven, and that will sit on top of the heated water, on top of the water pan, and then you have a cover. So the food pan, since it goes in the oven and it's dry, that would need a Lieben gum. So since you're not going to, firstly, you're not allowed in Manhattan or anywhere to bring a propane torch, you could bring these little ones, hide them, or whatever, bring them in your bag, but a 20-pound, you know, like a barbecue tank torch, propane, you can't bring it in. So and you would ruin their equipment in a hotel. So the caterers have to bring their own, we call them inserts. Anything that would need a Lieben gum or sheet pans, anything that they use in the oven direct, the caterer is going to bring his own. So the chafing dish, so the food pan would need a Lieben gum. The water pan is al ha'esh, so that needs regular hagala, and the challenge there, make sure they're clean and do it. The right kisui kli rishon, kli rishon, so you need to do hagala on the cover. And you could talk at different covers, a lot of them they're not kashered at all, because the stand that the water pan sits on, a lot of people are not even kashered, just make sure they're clean. Some of the other equipment you might hear about are goosenecks, escoffiers, monkey dishes. So if someone asks you a kasher these, you have to know what they are. And a escoffier happens to be like a food pan that has two compartments where they could put one type of vegetable or the potatoes, and when they come and serve you, so that will also go in the oven, so therefore you can't kasher that at the hotel. And those, like New York Hilton, some of the big hotels, those are made out of silver. If you attempt to kasher them even with a Lieben Kal, you would ruin them. Okay, so hagala. We know about some of the difficulties of kashering in an actual pot. First of all, once if you do hagala, kashering small utensils, not the pot itself, usually when you put something in, If it's metal, it's going to cool down the water. Now you have to wait for it to reboil. If you're doing thousands of pieces of silverware or larger items, it's just going to take forever. So then we have the steam kettle. There are two different types of steam kettles in a kitchen. I'm not talking about a factory, in a kitchen. One is actually tilts. There's a little crank, and if they want to get whatever food's in there, it will pour out. The other way, it has a valve, and that valve is very important. You have to not just open the valve, you have to unscrew the fitting and take it apart and clean inside before you would kasher that type of steam kettle. One of the hotels actually has sinks that have a heating source underneath it, and it's very geschmack. It's the steam kettle is very deep. If you have a basket, you're reaching down. It's hard work on your back. Here, you put your basket right in the sink. It's not that deep, and you could just toss the silverware as you go. One of the halachos in Tuflim Beis, you can't put a lot of things in a basket. First, it says a basket is one of the ideal ways to do hagala. You could also do it with the pliers. You know, you hold the item. Let's see. You know, and you could dip it in. The halacha says that now the part where the pliers were holding, you know, you have to grab it and do it a second time. That would be the same if you're koshering with gloves, unless these gloves are waterproof. They could stay in the boiling water for a short amount of time. So if you're doing something, you could dip it with one hand, pull it out, and grab from another spot, and do that. You know, just like the halacha with the pliers. So the problem with the basket, what most people do, because you can't do one or two forks by themselves, you have to do a lot at a time. You have to go through them all, make sure they're clean. Certain hotels, you know already from experience which are dirtier than others. And so since you're doing a lot, and you want, you know, what do you do about this halacha? So what minhag is to shake the basket under the water while it's under the water to so they're not touching on each other. Also, you can't just put it in and pull it out. It has to be around 10 seconds. You have to give some time for the bleeds to go out. So the mile of the sink that I was telling you about, if you put the basket in first, as you're checking that they're clean, you could just toss them in. So as they're floating down the water, there's nothing touching it. So you don't have that concern of that a lot of silver sitting on top of each other. I mentioned about a dabra poigim. Of course, if you're koshering silverware that's an eina ben yoyma, that is a ben yoyma, then you need a dabra poigim. You don't want to use bleach. It will ruin the silver. Ammonia is really the best because it doesn't leave any chemical residue. Lately, I know two hotels, they don't want to use ammonia. They're going green, and they have this environmentally safe. So they have this chemical, which it's a sanitizer. And it's really, I asked someone who used it there, and I said, did they make you rinse it off afterwards? And they said, no. So I said, Mamonoshev, if they're not worried about it sitting on the silverware, then why, you know, how is this a dabra poigim? And I tested it out. I did a job. We went the night before. On a large job, a Sunday job, it was coming Motzi Shabbos already. So I waited till like 2 in the morning when no one's around, and we used the silver. But this chemical was gave it the water blue color. So I think a lot of people see it. It's all blue, but we tasted it. I don't know what the result is. The person who was with me brought a sample of Rabelski to taste it, but it didn't. I was tasting and showing everyone.
Has anybody spoken to him since?
I'm sorry?
Has anybody spoken to him since?
I don't know. But the hashpacha I was with, the person I was with, had that this certain caterer will not be allowed back in this particular hotel until this is rectified. This another hotel which had this, and it's like with union rules, the union dishwashers who are near the place where you're koshering, they complain about the smell. This is another hotel. So we asked permission. They said, yeah, you can go ahead as long as you don't use too much. But anyway, even if your silverware is eino ben yoyma, the kettle that you're using is not. And even if they let you seal up the kettle, again, silverware that's eino ben yoyma, that means someone has to go for a Sunday job, someone has to go on Erev Shabbos. They have to count out everything you need. You have to seal it up, shrink wrap it, sign it. You know, you can't just, you know, say that, oh yeah, this wasn't used. So you have to actually take care that it wasn't used for 24 hours. But even if they let you seal up a kettle, the kettle is heated by steam, and at the same time that you're koshering, they're cooking their lobster in their steamer or using another steam kettle, you know, 10 feet away or 20 feet away, whatever it is. It's all connected, the same steam. So the condensate, after it heats up the steam kettle, let's say the trach one, is going to bring those trach bleas now back to the boil, and that's going to heat up your thing. So, did I have shisha? You're talking a lot of silverware that you're doing in there. I don't know. We're not. That's very dangerous to try to start making a tejman of shisha in a case like this. But there are some people that make different tejvanis. But bottom line is, we kasha with ammonia. I know both Rav Belsky and Rav Schechter hold that it's not considered sharmashkim. I mean, it's clear. Anyway, they hold it's not a chesaron of sharmashkim of kashering. Of course, if you're at a hotel or you're kashering a place or a factory for a one-time deal, you'll have to drain the boiler, because whatever went into the boiler last week is now traced. You have to actually drain the boiler. When they turn it on and add fresh water, that will re-kasher the boiler. And then you start from scratch. This is a problem. Some steam kettles are self-contained. The water is in there. They fill it up like halfway. You can't go, right? You need an airspace. And then when they have whatever heating source, either gas or electric, it'll heat up. The empty space will become steam. And it'll just stay in there the whole time. Now, whatever's in there, even if the kettle is a eino ben yoino, but you have the end now, you have the bleas in that water is trach. So you can't kasher this kettle. I mean, you could use it for kashering if you have...
No draining for that?
There is a way to take care of it. They don't drain it. If you're going to kasher, when I kasher a hotel for Pesach, you have to call someone down, and then usually, again... You don't want to touch things if you don't have to, because of the cloud that if you break it, you know, or if it breaks, even if you didn't break it, they'll blame you. So you call someone down and they can drain this, and it takes very slow, you know, adding water back into this jacket. But a lot of people, I know people that have kashered these kettles and not realize that it wasn't a draining kettle. But anyway, the water was in there the whole time. Now, what you can do to get around this is when the condensate, if they, instead of returning it back to the boiler, they could break the line and have it go to the drain or onto the floor. I have factories where they have tanks that are always kosher, so that condensate they retrieve goes back to the boiler. But the ones that are either milk tanks or tray, that they go down to the drain. I have two factories, one that closed down already, and another one that I go to very frequently. The mechanic or the manager did this without the company even knowing. You know, did it for us. Because you have to understand, when you're heating a boiler, it's very expensive. So if you have hot water, the condensate that's coming off the kettle, it's coming back, now you're heating the boiler with this hot water. It's a lot better than heating it with cold city water. You're safe, so you have energy. Plus, factories have to treat any water that goes down the drain. So it's a very cost-effective for companies to save this water, this condensate, which is a problem for us. Another problem when you're kashering different utensils in a plant or a kitchen is a nafa. You have strainers, skimmers, a china cat, a colander, and a grinder. I don't know if you've seen a meat grinder. You have a die with small holes. So right, it's brought down since it's so hard to clean it, right? The Ramah says that nagel shalolish lishdamish benaf ali de hagala the ein lishanos. So one eighth that we have is you can do a libum kal and burn it. The problem is most of the things that you're going to hit with a torch, these things, they won't be ruined, but they'll be discolored. So you ask them if you want me to do that, make, you know, have it discolored, and or your option is buy a new one for Pesach or whatever you're kashering from. So that's something you have to have in mind. And even when you look at some of these things and you see they're clean, as soon as you hit the torch to it, you all of a sudden you see smoking and you see the the coals, you see that there actually still is ba'en there. So it is a very, very nageya halakha. I didn't bring a temperature chart. Now, factories, when you're doing hagalah, some companies, they have what's called a Taylor chart. It's a round piece of paper, and usually a 24-hour, it goes into this box, and for the whole day, it's recording the temperature of the inside of the tank. They have different needles with different colored pens So they record at different spot, different locations in the system. So there are some places where my function at the OU, popping in once a month, twice a month, is to review the charts. In other words, the company will be cashing on their own. In other words, they know. Now, so this is only done in a closed system, like the plate heat exchanger or pipes. If I have this thermocouple inside a pipe, right? If it measured if the water hit this, then it had to hit the whole pipe, because in order for it to continue further, it's going to hit the whole surface of the pipe. Now, if I ain't in an open tank, how do I know that it overflowed and went over the top? I had someone, actually lives here in Lakewood now, once went to a company, and he saw the charts, and again, there were either other hashkafas or years ago, maybe people relied on these charts even with open tanks. And the person was reviewing the chart, and he saw that, let's say it took 20 minutes to get up to 212. And he asked them, can I see the charts from the actual production? So the production temperature, they were cooking at only 160. And he saw it took 40 minutes. So how could it take longer to cook it, to bring it to a lower temperature than the Hagala? So what he hopped was that this point of measuring the water is at the bottom of the tank. So in order to produce the chart to show the rabbi, they filled it up with a foot, right, an 8-foot tall tank. They filled it with a foot of water, boiled that foot of water just so it will make a recording on the chart so they could show, you see it reach boiling. So that's why now we don't rely on looking at reviewing charts in anything that has an open tank. When I got to a company, I pointed this out, they wanted to come up with some system. They made a little box, and they put this in the box on the edge of the tank, and they said, you see, when the water overflows, it's going to hit this inside the box on the edge. I said, yeah, but you could take a picture and just pour on it. So that's the company that we now go 1, 2, 3 times a week. And it's been for, I don't know, around 8 years now that we're doing that.
All companies start to do it all themselves. They do it all themselves.
What? Okay, so let me explain something. A certain company, let's say eggs or drink companies, so they could be going back and forth, Milkitz, Par, or even a non-certified product and a certified product. I have one company that does drinks, and before they do an OU product, it doesn't matter what the product was before, if it was a non-OU product or a non-certified product, you know, it could be a kosher product, it just doesn't have, they didn't apply for hashkafa, so maybe someone wasn't mying so much into those ingredients. Even, I mean, we do require that we have a list of everything in the plant. But anyway, so they just, by policy, they do this kashering before every OU run.
I know it's
wondering. But, sorry?
How can you have a charge for those important? Maybe it's just different than the product.
How do I?
Have you done the charge?
Oh. Okay, that's your... So, again, you have to know how to read the charts. And again, let me explain. Rabbi Gerson mentioned CIP. When we were talking about that spray ball, CIP means cleaning in place. So most factories have something called a CIP, which means after it's all preset, computerized, and this is something you can double-check, that when they end the run, first they do a rinse. Then they do a hot caustic wash. Usually the hot caustic is not hot enough for us. It's usually around 165, depending on what chemical they're using, depending on what plant. And then they'll use, and then they'll do a hot rinse. And place where we want that their CIP should also be a koshering, then they have a separate mode in that program where they do, one plant I go, they call the sterilization. But that's the koshering. And I follow the spikes. So you could see, and they label each product going in, each product going out. Now, this one plant I have, and a lot of plants, they have multiple sets of paperwork that you could double check. Every time that they go on a break, they write down every half hour, you know, where they're holding on one piece of paper. They take a break, it's shut down. I compare that to the chart, and I could see that. They have a piece of paper, the caps that go on top of the bottles. There's a piece of paper, the caps. I have literally around 10 different documents. That, how do I know that it's clean?
I don't
know if they're using Sharmashkin. What Sharmashkin, first of all, what Sharmashkin would they be using? It's a company, it's a drink. I see the computer, the CIP system. No, it's all in the computer. Listen, if you go to a plant, I don't know how to explain this well enough, but that is like the least chashash ever. There's so many other chashashes. That is like, you know. Oh, so how do you know it's clean? So that is important. And so let me just show you. So places where I do kasha. So one of the problems you have to know about cleaning are these fittings. So there are a lot of different points on a set of pipes. This is just a regular two-way valve that shuts and closes. You have another thing called a three-way valve. It would almost look something like this T, but it would be a valve. And I know that the end gets stuck in here. So when I go to a place that I'm koshering, so I might need them to open this up, rinse it out with the hose, put it back, because their CIP might not get... Now this, you can see, this piece here is capped. So I would call this a dead end. At one point, they wanted to go somewhere else. They no longer need to, so they just put a cap here. But now, if... Let's say margarine. I do a margarine company. So let's say margarine is flowing through here. It fills up this dead end. Well, I'm doing the CIP. You know, there's no place for this margarine to go. You know, unless the water is going to force it up. So this is a place that you have to be aware of. Open it up, rinse it out, close it up, and then go back to with the kashering. So you have to know where these parts are. You can spot check different things. When I get plants that have USDA, especially if you have a good relationship with them, you see those inspectors, those plants that have full-time USDA inspectors, they sign off on every chart. Some dairies, they have I was told you about the calibration. These plants, they have to be accurate. They're actually sealed by the government, and they come and check the calibration. So you don't have, again, you could use your own equipment, but those are, you know you can rely on the temperatures in those places. But again, nowadays one of the best things for kashrus is allergens. You know, if you're running, doing something kashrus from milchix, you know, they don't want an allergen, so they don't want anything getting in there. It's also very good just to explain to a company that has no shifas to kashrus. You know, you go down to, I don't know, North Carolina or some other, you know, we're not only talking about New York that we go to. Factories aren't all in New York and New Jersey. You go and you have to explain to them. So you can use this muscle, you know, of allergens. I have to explain why they needed a whole separate grinder for their rework. So there are a lot of things that come to play. The usually your contact in the factory is the quality insurance, the QC people. Anyway, let me just... I know Rabbi Grossman passed out. This is what this Matshuva is referring to. I don't know if everyone got it. This is called a sight glass. So if you just have pipes, stainless steel pipes like this, you know, at a glance you can't tell whether the product is actually moving, flowing, or not. So they have this thing called a sight glass. It could be either horizontal or vertical, and they'll see the product in that. So the question I had is, since we right know, like the Ramah, not to kasha glass, So if you read the tshuva, you'll see why this sight glass would not be a problem in a factory. Okay, so there are other things. I mentioned the charts. Gerson mentioned you have a tank that doesn't have its own heat source. What do you do? So one thing you can do, if it's a smaller tank, they have these called liquefiers, small mixers. If it doesn't have a jacket, doesn't have its own heat source, but something was poured in over Yad Saletus, so now it's treif or milk, whatever it is. So something, you can fill it up with water and put a steam hose into it. While the steam hose is in it, that will give it a din of a kli rishon. You put hot water already, or you heat it up with that steam hose, and then you have a kli rishon. So I had one plant where we tied the steam hose down, so I couldn't get into the water to measure, and there was no dial, nothing to do. So they have another thing. These are called temperature dots. They're non-reusable stickers. You stick it on the outside of the tank, and when it reaches that temperature, you could purchase these at different temperatures, 200, 210. They don't have exactly 212. You can go a little longer. Anyway, the center will turn black, and then you know it reached that temperature. Now, one of the workers in a plant told me that they were using this. It had nothing to do with kashrus. It was for the USDA or something. He said that when the inspector wasn't looking, The guy pulled out a cigarette lighter and waved it near it, and it turned black. So if you're going to use these, you have to stay there and watch. Someone told me once, a guy said he was at a factory, at a different factory years ago, and this is one of the workers, so if it's true or not, but he said the rabbi came in and he saw the equipment, then he went in the next room to daven. And that's probably where this whole misconception that the rabbis bless the food, because the first thing they see the Mashgiach sitting there davening in the factory. But he was davening, and they had a camera in the room where they were going to be kashering, and he had a monitor where he's davening, he's like looking up. So this guy told me that they took a steam hose and they waved it under the camera. So the guy just saw steam all over the place, so he thought everything was being kashered. But anyway, I mentioned those valves in the steam kettle, so they have a set of brushes, different diameters that can actually go into the valves and clean them out. What I would usually do is use my torch, because you can't reach your hand, you can't get all the way, and then burn out any band that might be stuck in there. Then I put it back together and fill it up and do Haggalah. Let's see. Iri mikli rishon. So again, mostly the tables and sinks in hotels. If you have a coffee pot, you dip it in, you're going to pour it. Of course, that would be a klisheni, so the halacha is very clear. If you hold it in long enough that bubbles are coming out of the pot itself, then this now has a din of a kli rishon. Every time you go back for another load, you have to wait long enough, which is usually around 10 seconds if you have a rolling boil. You have to be careful on this safa kilua. You have to make sure that the surface is dry so it doesn't cool off. Someone gave me this idea, and after this, just this past Sunday, I decided next year I'm going to buy like four more of these. This I actually put on the fire on a stovetop, and this, you know, holds, I don't know, like the equivalent of a lot more, and I could do it without going back and forth. I could do a much larger surface with this. Sometimes you go to a place where you don't have any source, so you could use an electric one. It has to be one that actually comes to a boil and one that you could see the bubbles. Again, if you're doing something which is a ben yomah, you'd have to pour ammonia right in here. In the kettle, if you're dipping it into a steam kettle, so the kettle itself would have the Dvar Poigim in it. I just lost one. I mean, one just died. I started out with six. This is my last one. Another thing, when you have kalim in a kitchen, it's very important, similar to the napa, but this is a rolled edge. So inside the rolled edge could be, not only could, it will definitely be ba'an. And you can't do Haggalah on this, besides the handle, that's all another story, but I'm just talking about the edge now. You can't do Haggalah because you can't see what's in there. If there's a spot that you can't see, whether there's the end, that is possible to get. So anyway, so something like this, I would use a torch. This is actually mat gas, which is a little hotter than propane. And see, if you heat it up, again, it's going to discolor it. I don't know what kind of... That's a leave. Again, you see, most people, your wife's not going to want you to do this to her pot. I mean, this was my wife's pot. But if you go to a catering place, and you know, if he's kashering with peso, he says, "Do you mind if it looks like this, or do you want? It's your choice. Or do you want to buy new ones? You want me to kasher this? That's what it's going to, you know." And of course, you go all the way around, and you'd burn off everything.
This could be libum gamma.
What?
Just
on that spot was libum gamma. I don't need to do a libum gamma on this. I wouldn't do a libum gamma on the entire thing. But I'm just showing to burn out. Most of the things we do with torches are for cleaning purposes, not necessarily... let me just see. Okay, so going on to quickly, libum kal, we do ovens, deck ovens, like similar to ones in your home, convection ovens. Convection ovens have shelves we call racks, and they have side pieces. The big challenge there is cleaning them. They're interwoven, and it's very hard to clean that out. What we do in the place that we're able to do it is we put all the racks on the stovetop, and you cover it with silver foil, so now when the heat flame comes up, it gets trapped in there, and you can might as well get like a libum yama on it, and it will burn everything off. The problem is that when the heat goes up and reflects back down, it's going to keep going back down to under the burners. It's not like your stove at home. There's a hole there like the older stoves, and all the grease is under there. So before you do this, you're going to want to make sure the grease, it doesn't affect kashrus, but it affects you burning down the kitchen. So you want to clean out the grease underneath this thing so you don't cause a grease fire. If you do have a small grease fire, a small one, you can let it burn out. Kosher salt, the coarse salt, is great because it smothers the flame and puts out a grease fire. Grease fire, you cannot put water. Right? You'll see different fire extinguishers, A, B, C, rated. If you put water, I had it once, a Shabbos lift at a program I do in the summer. They had too many of those little tea lights together, and they all formed like one liquid, and one of the workers threw water on it, and this fireball went up and right in his face. He's very lucky. He survived that. But so you don't want to put water. Another thing that works great is heavy cream or milk. But if you're doing the palatial job, then you're going to have to re-kasher, so that's not really suggested. Then you have a fire extinguisher, which before I kasher, besides keeping a small one here, I always go to the wall. Sometimes hotels, they're expired. Make sure it's a good one and have it right next to you. And then kitchens have something called an ancil system. An ancil system, they don't want, let's say you walk away, you're not there to grab the fire extinguisher and put it out. So they have a metal link in the hood above the stoves, above the deep fryers, above the grills, and the link is attached to two wires that have tension, and when that link is rated to melt at a certain temperature, you know, for different places they have different rated links, when that melts, it relieves the tension and shoots out this powder. Now, a sprinkler system, it's a little glass head that if you were to break that sprinkler system, the water is only going to come out of that one head. But an ancil system, it's not controlled by each head. So the whole kitchen will become like, I mean, forget the job. Close it down. I know a Pesach hotel, he lost in one shot, easy over $50,000 of food. Just health inspector comes, makes you throw everything out. You want to do everything you can not to set up an ancil system. Okay. So again, libum kal on an oven where without direct flame, I would just be putting everything back together and turn it after I clean it, take it apart, clean it, and just turn it to the highest temperature, over 500 for an hour and a half, 2 hours, whatever. You can ask your own place how long or at what temperature. Belsky has a sliding scale. If it goes to a lesser temperature, it would still work if it's at a longer time frame, and there's a certain sliding scale there. A torch. Okay, so I have libum kal. This is a pet peeve by me. A torch, or a lot of people think, is a magic wand. This particular one is a roofer's torch. The flame shoots out to around here. You know, you go back and forth. Again, if you're doing a stainless steel table, you have to go back and forth. The thing that makes metals bend and get warped is being heated unevenly. So if you were to just heat up one corner and then move on and then move on, you're going to get welts in the table. So that's what you want to go back and forth, a sweeping motion, and you slowly bring it up to an even temperature. I went to one of my factories, had a dual hashgacha, and I saw there was a table, stainless steel table, that was purchased at an auction. And how do I know this? Because the auction sticker was still on it, and I saw it was a little brown. But for libum kal, it wasn't brown enough. For a real libum kal. So the Rav Amakshe came down, and his employee who kashered it, you know, kashered other tables right in front of him, and he's going back and forth, and then he moved on to the next thing, and the other Rav Amakshe went down and held his hand there. Okay? So, I mean, he saw himself. So in order to get the temperature that you need, again, it's not a magic wand. You really need to know how long you have to hold it there. So now you're going to ask, and I have this, but if this gets hooked up, I have 30-pound tanks. This gets hooked up to the propane tank. The other end, this is a quick disconnect, so it's very convenient. I don't need any tools. I just pop it in, and then if I'm doing something smaller, or I don't want to, you know, I could use this head. This head is much bigger than a torch like this. It'll get much hotter. I can do a larger area, but a more controlled area than in here. I've done stainless steel commercial dishwashers, you know, where I'm actually in halfway in the dishwasher while I'm doing it, so this is a lot easier. So the biggest question, how do you know? So you could use that infrared thermometer. How do you know when you reach Liebenkahl, whatever shear you're trying to achieve? The infrared thermometer is not very accurate. It has something to do with reflecting emissivity, it's called, the reflecting of the surface. Welders have something called temp sticks. This is a crayon. Everything in the Bria melts at a different temperature. So this, they use this, that's why you can see the different colors. This, whatever they made this one out of, melts at 1,000 degrees. So if I'm heating up the table and I only get 999 degrees, I go like this, nothing will happen. As soon as it's 1,000 degrees, it'll flow like a liquid. And so I have 850, 500, you can buy them in whatever temperature you want, and then you could, again, you're not going to go over every spot with this, but you need to test the table. Every table or surface is a different thickness, so you don't know how long you're going to need to hold the hold the torch there. So this is a very accurate way of testing.
800 degrees for Liebenkahl?
I'm sorry?
800 degrees for Liebenkahl?
No. Going back, just because I said it. Again, 500 would not be the temperature of a Liebenkahl with a direct flame either. That would be the temperature without a direct flame. There's certain things if I know I got that temperature, and then I had a direct flame on top of it, there's a reason for that. But we wouldn't be samach on 800 degrees for a Liebenkahl or 850 for a Liebenkahl. Let me just see what else. Okay. I went to one plant that makes cheese, and they had these stainless steel troughs or vats, and they're meant to have, they have a jacket, so they're meant to boil. These particular ones, either, I don't even recall the reason why we didn't boil them out. The smaller ones we did, but they wanted me to do a Liebenkahl in these things, so it was twofold, two difficulties. One is, since there was a jacket, and I'm heating it with a torch, when you heat the space, the air space, when there's no water in there, it could actually blow up. I saw a steam kettle once where the pressure release valve was ripped out of it, must have shot right off. Someone was koshering it with a jacket, and it built up air pressure inside, and it just blew off this valve, ripped it right off the metal. So I was concerned about that. The other thing is the size of this. You can see here, if you want to pass it around, actually it stood inside the vat in order to kosher it. So, you know, like you're painting a room, you got to paint yourself into a corner. You know, you don't want to do that. So I had to be careful as I was going through. And if anyone wants to look, I just printed out some of these pictures of... let me just show one thing. If you can see this bar above my head, it's the mixing blades are not there. But in the cheese plant, they have mixing blades that move back and forth along. And if you're adding the double mind, you'd be walking along as it's moving and dump it in. But that's what that piece on top is. The actual blades we did hug all in a smaller tank. Okay, the last thing I'll talk about is Liebengummer. There's a piece of equipment, a brazier, or if you have a griddle that make pancakes. Some people told me they will do it with a torch. I'd rather use charcoal. Charcoal will bring up an even heat. Using the torch, holding it there for so long to get to the temperature you want, 1,000 degrees, it could very easily warp it. Charcoal has its own problems. If you're doing charcoal in a kitchen, it's very easy to set off that Ansel system. But you know, once you have that red glowing, and if you in the video, Akash at a hospital kitchen, they caught a very good picture on the video of koshering with charcoal. I just did this Sunday and touched something like and have a reminder from that. Pace, I do a meat place that does salamis, a hot dogs, processing place, and the rods that the meat sits on, you know, they're all tied together, the links. Those we need a Liebengummer. So I had around 300 of these rods. We had to do a Liebengummer. I had a small, like the size, length of one of these tables. I filled up a whole bed of coals, got it lit. I did this outside. And this was in the winter. and then I put a whole row of these rods, and I put another layer, and then I had to pick them out with pliers, and that's right.
Red.
Sorry?
Mamas turned red.
Mamas turned red. And the mamas turned red, and then I check. By the way, if you're in a kitchen and you want to see if it glows red, if you turn off the lights, you sometimes will see it glow, and you won't have to wait as long. That's glowing red already. You know, sometimes it'll be harder to see. You'd have to wait to get even hotter than glowing red. But that's what this is very good for, the infrared thermometer. There's kashering an oven. I don't want to go into the halacha part of it with a libum chomer. Most people that tell you that they kasher an oven with a blowtorch most likely did not get a libum chomer and probably didn't even get a libum chomer. Again, the whole magic wand theory, if you go anywhere near the thermostat, you're going to ruin the oven. So that means they have to go around it. You know, when, by kashering, by turning it on, then you know, and letting it go for 2 hours, then you know every spot got it. I'll end up with this. I had to kasher a pizza shop. There's a tray pizza shop that was going kosher, and so there, the pizza oven, you need a libum chomer, ikar din. It sits on the stones or directly on the oven bed. So one thing you can do is you can take those stones or inserts or take them out and do it somewhere outdoors. I was once kashering with charcoal. So once kashering, I had my Costco card in my front pocket. I used to bring it to show, and while it was in my pocket, it melted. That's how hot it gets when you're doing libum chomer. So anyway, so I had a reason, I'll tell you that reason in a second. I had a reason why I did not want, or I couldn't bring charcoal into this place. I didn't even, when I kashered this restaurant, I didn't even bring my large torches. I did the whole thing, which was more time consuming, with this torch. And Haggadah and Iri. So, what we did was, I'll tell you the reason why I didn't want to do all this. It was this particular pizza shop is in the lobby of the Empire State Building. And I told everyone that I could think of better ways to become famous than being the person that burnt down the Empire State Building. Okay? So, I had to kasher this oven. An eitzah that we came up with was we had someone come down that fixes the ovens, and he removed the thermostat. Now, the thermostat works, right? When it gets to the temperature you have it set, it stops. Then when it cools off, it'll heat up again, on and off. It keeps cycling. There's no thermostat there. It's just going to keep going and going. What I was concerned, if it gets so hot to 1,000 degrees, what's happening in the ductwork? I got this ductwork that's running all the way up the Empire State Building. I don't know if there's grease up there. So that was my big concern. So when I actually got over 1,000 degrees on some spots, I got 1,000 on every spot. At that time, the ductwork was only 200 degrees. And if you think about it, that's the oven is made to contain the heat. It's, you know, if it lost so much heat that I was concerned about in the first place, it wouldn't be an efficient oven. So that works well. You could, I won't guarantee it, I won't take out cries, I would definitely want someone to sign this release form, but if you take the thermostat out and then just turn the oven and watch it, you know, then you could get a libum chomer on the oven.
Don't you have to kasher the thermostat also?
Kasher.
If it's in the inside of the oven.
What thermostat?
No, the
stones are in the.
Only the stones need to leave and gum.
Yeah, well, first, only the surface that it's sitting on needs a leave and gum. The walls, everything else, just need a leave and gum. But in this particular instance, if I'm taking the stones out, then I'm doing a libum chomer on them, and I'm doing a libum kol, just burning out. And the good thing is, these go. You have a very stark libum kol. They go. They could. A regular oven will go in a hotel will go to 525. These could go 600-700 degrees. So it's a very stark libum kol in those ovens. But here I got 1,000. On the surface of the stones, which were in the oven, so the walls were not. You know, much further. Yeah.
Sure. Just before we end, Shkarkar, Perlmutter, I think everybody could see what an expert he is. Also, he's an expert in figuring out how the Goyim are trying to fool him. We have somebody right now, Jungermann from Lakewood, who's getting shimmish from my Perlmutter. If any of you want to If any of you...
He learns here, he knows.
Huh?
They know.
Oh, they know? He learns here?
Oh. Yes, sir.
Is he here? He's not here.
Yitzi Tversky, right?
Yes.
So he's come around. He was on the SOU seminar, so he asked me afterwards. And he went to factories with Nuer Akasha and went to catering jobs. I just did pomegranate last Sunday. In Flatbush, he was there.
So if any of you want to go out to koshering, Rav Perlmutter is very gracious to be machanek new people to do koshering. The other thing is, one last thing, Rabbi Gersten, we have in the OU tshuvas on thousands of different shalas from the Poiskim. If you're interested, he could just touch a few buttons in a computer, and we have right away the tshuva. So I'll give you his email address. If you have anything, we are happy to help you in this regard. Gersten, G-E-R-S-T-E-N-E, at OU.org. If you ask him on anything, what the OU Poiskim wrote about, he'll be happy to send you.
Wants a little steady list of things that you're going to run into.